And Smashville, good morning, and thank you for joining us. Fourth and final hour off and running here on this Tuesday morning drive. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chris Mason coming up at the bottom of the hour. The big finish at 9:45. But let's get back into something we had a really good discussion about in the second hour of the show. Jeremy Pruitt and whether or not he can actually, now assuming Jeremy Pruitt would win his final two games, get to 7 wins, 4 in a row, 4 in the conference, is Jeremy Pruitt up for a legit chance to win SEC Coach of the Year? Certainly you've got Stoops at Kentucky, Ed Orgeron at LSU. I think it's a fascinating debate, especially considering what expectations were back around Labor Day.
Yeah, I think those are the three names that you certainly want to have a conversation about, and a lot of it still depends on what takes place. If Tennessee goes 2-0 down the stretch, beats Missouri, beats Vanderbilt, and Kentucky loses two games to Middle and to Louisville because they've sort of, you know, the air's out of the balloon, so to speak, after losing to Georgia, then you can make a very strong case for Jeremy Pruitt. If Coach O loses two and they go 8-4 and they finish, you know, they finish third in the division, is he really that? I think a lot of it still hangs in the balance. Now, I will say this. I think if Jeremy Pruitt wins one more game and they go 6-6, especially if they beat Vanderbilt, a team that is in-state and certainly views Tennessee as a major rival, I'm not sure it's a two-way street, but if they go 6-6, get to a bowl game and beat Vanderbilt, beat two ranked teams, who cares? Mm-hmm. Who cares if you actually win the award or not? I understand it's a nice thing to celebrate, but it doesn't actually mean anything to your program moving forward. What matters is, hey, you did a heck of a job in your first year coaching. And so I think it means maybe more to Coach O, who came into the season with a lot of doubts and doubters, and myself and yourself included. Oh, yeah. And I think it means a lot to Mark Stoops because it was arguably the best season in Kentucky football for I don't know how long, but they have to win two games. Now they'll be heavily favored against Middle Tennessee and especially Louisville. But if they finish 9-3, I don't think people realize how good of a record that is for Kentucky. They have not been better than five. They have not had a winning record in the SEC since 1977, and they finished 5-3, so it's their first winning record in the league. They're going to be second in the division regardless of what happens from here on out because they're done playing games. It was a phenomenal season for Kentucky football. It didn't end the way they wanted it to. But if you beat Louisville and you beat Middle and you go 9-3 with all that, you beat Florida for the first time in 30-plus years, I think Stoops will get my vote at that point. But if Pruitt goes 2-0 down the stretch, beats Missouri and beats Vanderbilt, there would be a lot of votes that would go his way. And if LSU finishes 10-2, top 10 in the nation, there'll be a lot of votes to go Coach O's way as well. So it's a good race.
Let's hear from the head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers, Jeremy Pruitt, yesterday on the Paul Feinbaum Show talking about the success they've had this season.
Well, you should improve every week. And, you know, we've really had good weeks of practice. I think our guys have tried to create the right practice habits. And we really improved it. Sometimes it hadn't showed on Saturdays because probably lack of execution. But I felt like Saturday that our guys played hard. Even though things didn't always go our way, I felt like they tried to find a way and stayed positive and competed hard. And I was proud to see them do that.
That was Pruitt yesterday with Feinbaum. And look, you know I'm a Pruitt guy, and I would love to sit here and, you know, blow the horn for Jeremy Pruitt to be Coach of the Year. But to your point, with what Kentucky has done this year, and going back to 1977, I mean, for God's sakes, I was 7 years from being born. Derek Mason was in diapers at that point. What Kentucky has done, even though Tennessee beat them head-to-head, you really can't put Tennessee ahead unless somehow they won 8 games with a bowl game. But even then, I still don't think
well, and you don't, the bowl game doesn't count towards, you know, the voting of that kind of stuff.
It's not,
they're going to vote on that stuff at the end of the year. I mean, in theory, you can get to 9. In theory. So, you know, Kentucky could get to 10 wins. I mean, they could finish 10-3 if they win a bowl game. And that's just a remarkable season for Kentucky, despite the head-to-head. And again, it's just like the committee. The committee doesn't necessarily just take head-to-head as the end-all, be-all. You know, the committee's not just going to put a team in over because they won against another team. It's about the entire body of work. And the job Stoops has done this year has been exceptional from top to bottom, especially considering how bad his quarterback is. Now, when you talk about Pruitt's chances to win two games down the stretch, I think that's where it gets more tricky because I think this Missouri team creates different challenges for Tennessee. They're more of a West Virginia-style football team than they are a Kentucky-style football team, where even Auburn – Jarrett Stidham, even though that Auburn team had one of its better offensive days that day against Tennessee, especially in the first half, Jarrett Stidham has struggled. The offensive line has struggled. They have not been a good offense all season. Tennessee capitalized. Defensively, they couldn't stop South Carolina's running game. Defensively, they've been great the last two games, but they haven't played a Drew Lock-style quarterback. And when they have, you know, they play Tua, when they play Jake Fromm, when they play Flank. Unfortunately, Felipe Franks had that kind of game. Now, that was more of a six-turnover thing, but Will Greer is on the same level as Drew Lock. You're just facing a different caliber of offense and a different type of offense. So it'll be a great test for a secondary and for that pass rush to see if what they did last week was legit or if it was more a function of Kentucky being one-dimensional. So we'll find out a little bit more about that defense. And, again, I am deciding my verdict on Jeremy Pruitt will not be decided until after the 12 games have been played.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, so good. If they lose to Missouri and beat Vanderbilt, it will have been a successful season. Whether he wins Coach of the Year or not is irrelevant to me. Is he the right guy for the job moving forward? And we will have learned at least a little bit in the positive category for Jeremy Pruitt this year.
Yeah, and I don't think you can look at it this week and say from a Vegas perspective, well, the Vols are a 5-point home dog. You know, we were about a 5-point home dog last week against Kentucky. I think to your point, you know, Kentucky is a run-first team with Benny Snell, and you didn't fear Terry Wilson this week. To your point, you know, spread it out, Drew Lock. That's advantage Missouri.
And the one thing, and Tennessee fans don't want to hear this, but it's not a knock on Tennessee's win last week. Kentucky didn't get off the bus. I'm sorry. You guys can – it's not a knock on Tennessee. Tennessee deserves all the credit for the win that they put together, for the way they played, for the game plan, for the defensive line and the front seven's play against Benny Snell, the way the offensive line gave Garantano time, the way everybody played. They deserve a ton of credit. Jeremy Pruitt deserves credit. That was a great win for their program. It does not – Kentucky didn't care. Like, I'm not saying they didn't care, like, mm-hmm. in the sense that they weren't trying.
No, they were deflated.
But they were deflated. There was clearly a lack of focus, preparation, and energy from Kentucky. That is not a knock on Tennessee. It doesn't take anything away from you. Two things can exist at the same time. Tennessee earned that win. It was a great win. And also, Kentucky was clearly deflated after losing the most important game in school history at mm-hmm. home against Georgia the week before. We talked about it going up into that game.
Yep.
That if they lose to Georgia, I thought they would lose to Kentucky. And that's what happened. Or they would lose to Tennessee. And that's what happened because kids are emotional, and young people can ride roller coasters sometimes. And so Mark Stoops, his team's got to get refocused. But this is a different beast, Missouri. It's just a different animal. And Missouri's games, look at their games. They should have beaten South Carolina on the road. That was a monsoon, and they lost on a two-point play late.
Mm-hmm.
They should have beaten Kentucky on probably what was a bad pass interference call that gave Kentucky an untimed down. They played as well against Alabama as anybody has.
As well as LSU did.
They've played as well as anybody has against Georgia, minus LSU. I mean, they were mm-hmm. at home down 10 to Georgia. This Missouri team is far better than a 2-4 record.
They beat Florida in the swamp by three touchdowns.
And they dominated Florida on the road against in the swamp. So this is a far better. I think you could argue this team is better than Kentucky. It's not going to look like that on paper. But you could argue that they were the better. They outplayed Kentucky for almost four full quarters in that game.
I don't disagree. I think if you were to tell me, would I rather have Benny Snell in that defense or Lockett quarterback? I think I would take Lockett quarterback.
Oh, that's a tough. That's a great question. I think I would lean defense just because I'm a defensive guy. Terry Wilson has been a liability though for mm-hmm. them. They've been one dimensional, and that's been the issue against A&M when they lost. That was the issue. And again, the untimed down came on what looked like a bad pass interference call. So Missouri probably should have won that game. Mm-hmm. So in theory, that takes away your winning record for Kentucky season after all that praise we heaped on Mark Stoops.
All right, coming up bottom of the hour, we'll talk to Chris Mason. Actually, Willie Donick spoke with Chris Mason. You'll hear that interview coming up in just about 20 minutes. But when we come back, Reese Davis, host of ESPN College Game Day. Very strong opinion. You don't want to miss this. We're back after this on Morning Drive. Welcome back in to Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5. The game, Nick Braden, D-Mace, and the Constable. Chris Mason will join us, bottom of the hour. But how about Reese Davis, Braden Gall?
Yeah, so yesterday I had a chance to talk to the host of Game Day, and I asked him, so we are in a world right now where Northwestern has clinched. Congratulations to the Cats. Pittsburgh's probably going to win the division and play Clemson in the ACC championship game. There's a good chance that Utah is going to win the South in the Pac-12. Arizona State's the other option. All of these teams have one thing in common. They've lost a boatload of games this year, and they're not elite-level teams. They all could be playing for conference championships. And if we lived in a world where automatic bids were a thing into the college football playoff, we would be staring at a bunch of opportunities for Northwestern, Pittsburgh, Utah, Arizona State, and maybe even Iowa State to have a chance to win their way into the playoff. I don't want to live in that world. And I asked Reese Davis, what are your thoughts on if we lived in this hypothetical automatic bid world, how would you feel about that this year?
Oh, I would hate that. I've hated it from the beginning. I hate the idea of people saying automatic bids. I hate the idea. I don't know if I'm being clear enough about this, but I'm not. the only way I will ever come around on automatic bids in this supposed expanded playoff, you know, 6, 8, 10 years down the line, whenever it happens, the only way I'll come around is if you get rid of conference championship games. You have to. Because then you can have a true measure of a champion. Because, see, I don't want to root for or against any team, but almost to quiet two things. To quiet the people who talk about, hey, win their conference, automatic bids. You know, I want Herm to win the Pac-12. I want Northwestern to win the Big Ten. You know, and Pittsburgh to win the ACC. Just to show that doesn't matter if you do the one game thing. Anybody can lose. Bob Knight used to say to me all the time when I did games with him, dumb loses more than smart wins. And you can lose. There aren't many teams that can beat Alabama and Clemson, for instance, but they can lose. You know, anybody can screw up a game and lose. That, and I also want to eliminate from the lexicon, they didn't even win their division. You're going to tell me it's easier to win is it easier to come in second in the Big Ten East or to win the ACC Coastal? Which one? Everybody knows the answer to that. So that selling is, Ohio State didn't win their division. Alabama didn't win their division. Is ridiculous. Other than that, I don't really have an opinion on it.
How about that?
Reese Davis spitting fire right there. You don't hear Reese Davis going to college football fan troll voice mode. Like he's pretty by the book and down the middle, but he got pretty worked up about it. And I tend to agree. Now I want to ask you guys: Do you want the sport to be more like the NFL, which is if you win your division, or you win your league, or you win your whatever, that you get into a postseason and you clinch an automatic bid, or do you want it to be more subjective, where we have a human element deciding, hey, after all these games have been played, we think these are the best teams in America. We're going to give them a chance. Because right now, Pittsburgh, Northwestern, and Utah aren't even in the top 25. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're ranked 14th. They're not even top 25 teams.
But you brought in the NFL to the conversation. Mm-hmm. Let's look at the best division winner in the NFL against the worst division winner in the NFL. That separation is much smaller from a talent standpoint, as what you've alluded to, the NFL being week to week, teams not separated by that much other than maybe a quarterback. And the Vegas perspective, what's the biggest line going to be for the best team in the NFL against the worst division winner?
Well, right now.
Not much, right?
No.
What would the matchups be right now? Pittsburgh versus Houston? Right? Let's just say hypothetically.
6 points? 6, 7
at
points?
At the most.
No more than 10.
Mm-hmm.
What would Northwestern Alabama be?
Four touchdowns.
Oh, my goodness. It'd be like 30 points.
Right? Yeah.
I just think it waters down the product.
Totally agree.
I understand why fans want to see a – because it's cleaner, right? Like an automatic bid process is a cleaner process. There's no arguing. You can't say that somebody got picked over somebody else because of brand bias or whatever. Mm-hmm. We eliminate all that because it's a clean, easy way to do it. But schedules aren't the same. Talent's not the same. College football is 130 teams. You can't tell me that they all play the same schedules. It's impossible. Whereas the NFL, basically everybody plays an identical schedule. And the talent gap between, 53 guys being paid on one team and 53 guys getting paid on another, there's just no difference, really, in that much talent. I just don't want to see our playoff product watered down. And then they all say, well, I want to win it on the field. That's what the regular season is for. Win the games.
You don't want it to become NCAA basketball, where just because you win your tournament, you're automatically in. We've had it happen several times, and we've had it happen in recent history here, whether it's TSU or Belmont, where they were clearly the best team in the conference in the OVC, but they lose in the first or second round because of the ball wasn't going in the basket that night. That shouldn't disqualify them from the tournament because they've clearly proven that they are the best team in their conference. But because they had an off night, now they go from, having hopes of being in a tournament to – now they're getting the NIT bid, if that. So, no, I don't want college football to become college basketball.
If you want to go, if you want expansion, I'm good with that.
Yeah,
but
I'm good
not
with expansion.
But it's not at the cost of automatic bids. If you want to have the six best teams or the eight best teams, regardless of conference, I can live with I don't think it's necessary.
I think if you get eight teams, then it will end up being, you know, conference winners.
I think if you
do it six teams, then yes, but no.
Well,
but
look at what we
teams,
have this
then
year.
Definitely, yes.
I think I'm kind of with you, Derek. If they go to eight, they're probably going to make it the automatic bids because what they've done then is they've given themselves three at-large spots to sort of fix that problem, right? Like, hey, if Alabama loses to – like this, let's play out this year, right? Let's say Michigan's 12-1 and they're in, but they lose – or they're 11-1, they're in the playoff probably, but they lose to Northwestern. Well, that allows the committee then to say, well, Northwestern got the automatic bid, but we still think Michigan's good enough, so they can correct the mistake, right, and put Michigan in. That's why I think that that's probably the direction. Here's the other thing to consider. Northwestern was 6-4 right now, and they're 6-1 in the Big Ten. Give UCF – you're telling me UCF would be more deserving of a playoff spot? Like this example of Pittsburgh and Utah and Northwestern and these teams playing for conference championships – it is another reason why UCF doesn't belong in the playoff. Because UCF's schedule is nothing compared to Pittsburgh's schedule. Even though they beat Pittsburgh head-to-head, their schedules aren't the same. Pittsburgh's schedule is far more difficult than UCF's. Northwestern's schedule is far more difficult than UCF. And you're telling me that UCF is a better team all around than every team in the Big Ten West?
So you're saying
Nebraska, Iowa, Purdue?
Even with the expansion to eight, five conference champions, three at large, UCF is still shut out.
I think that in my heart of hearts, there's no way I'd ever believe that a team is good enough to do that. Because week to week, you just and you talk to coaches about this. I've talked to so many coaches about this. The week to week grind of playing in a Power Five league is all about line of scrimmage. It is all about the line of scrimmage. And group of don't tell me that UCF schedule when they play Tulsa and Tulane and East Carolina and Navy, who by the way isn't good this year, like. That's just not a schedule where you're going to be tested week in and week out on your endurance and your stamina and your depth and your talent. And it's just not the same. I mean, look at Tennessee's schedule this season. What would UCF's record be with the Tennessee Volunteers schedule? You're telling me
probably close to the same record.
They would have lost at least two or three games.
They'd probably be 5-5. Just like Tennessee. I don't see how UCF is going to line up against Bama, Georgia, Florida, and Auburn. In South Carolina.
Not when those teams have something to play for. UCF gets a down Auburn team after losing a conference title game in a bowl game.
In a bowl game.
Doesn't want to be there.
Yeah.
That's a spot where they can win. When there's something on the line, forget it. It's not happening.
And in a one-off, I think those group of five teams can win. And this is the same exact argument we're talking about with Pittsburgh and Northwestern. Like, why we don't want automatic bids is because Pittsburgh, for 12 games, was a mediocre team. And then they get the one crack at Clemson, and they pulled that upset, and now they're into the playoff. Because of an automatic bid. That's what the UCF argument is they didn't play anybody for 12 weeks. They didn't earn it. But then they get in a one-game situation against Washington State. They probably could win that game. They could probably beat Kentucky in a one-game situation. Ohio State this year because Ohio State's defense is way down.
They're not beating anybody in the top six.
But when you give them Ohio State's entire schedule and say, go through all of these games.
Yeah, they're not.
There's no chance.
Because it's hard week to week. And it's, you know, if you're playing against – you know, talent like that week in and week out, then you can't tell me UCF has enough talent to stay on par with, you know, Auburn, LSU.
What happens to the Vols when they get injuries because they don't have depth yet with Pruitt with recruiting cycles.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen if UCF played an SEC schedule and got a few injuries?
Yeah.
They'd be trotting out guys that would just get embarrassed.
Yeah, so think about this this is all you really need to think about. How many times has Alabama gone undefeated? Alabama, the greatest franchise.
In the Saban era once.
What?
In the greatest dynasty in the history of football, with the greatest players in the country, with the greatest coach that's ever walked the face of the earth. How many times has he gone undefeated with an SEC schedule?
What?
And that was, if you're ranking his best team from talent, I mean, that team probably not even in the
09.
Top two or three.
So you're telling me that UCF is going to do exactly what it's doing now.
No shot.
How many times has Clemson gone undefeated?
They haven't.
No, they haven't.
Yeah.
So why is it that the best teams with the best players and the best coaches can't even do this?
Mm-hmm.
But then, because again, UCF's won 22 straight. It is a great accomplishment.
But
it
what
is,
you did the prior year doesn't count for getting in.
Totally agree.
Yep.
It's a great accomplishment. It's something you should celebrate. And the marketing campaign, by the way, from UCF last year got them $200 million plus dollars worth of coverage by claiming national championship. Brilliant.
Yeah.
I love the idea. But don't tell me that if you played the same schedules, Clemson can't even go undefeated with Clemson's schedule. Why would UCF go undefeated with Clemson's schedule? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Coming up in about 15, 20 minutes, we've got the big finish. But up next, Chris Mason, Preds TV color analyst. Normally we talk to C-Mace live, but West Coast, time zone differences, traveling. You're going to hear Chris Mason with Willie Donick on the other side. That's next here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 A Game. Morning Drive rolling on here on this Tuesday. ESPN 102.5, The Game, Nick Braden, D-Mace, and The Constable. The big finish coming up in about 15 minutes. Preds lost last night 2-1 in the shootout. Anaheim picks up the win. Still, the Preds get a point as they fall in the fourth round of the shootout. Normally, we talk to Chris Mason live on a Tuesday, but with West Coast traveling, time differences, all of that, here is Chris Mason with Willie Donick.
We're outside the Honda Center following the Predators' first road loss of the season, and it's a shootout loss, so the Predators do pick up a point. Willie Donick and Chris Mason here with you. And Mace, it's always tough to feel after you lose a shootout. It's an odd feeling, and the Predators, I know, have only had a winning feeling so far, so it probably stings a little bit. But overall, a lot of things to like in a game that you went in without Victor Arvidsson and Cale Yarncroke.
Yeah, I think you have to like the response coming out of that second period. And again, the third period, they were able to turn it up and get that big goal. And you know, Pekka makes a huge save there with moments left in the game. So, you know, you play tomorrow night, you play tonight. You've got to take the positives out of this because you have no time to feel sorry for yourselves. And I know the guys will do that. Power play. Little disheartening again, 0-for-6. I think they had a big opportunity where that could have, we're just talking about that before we did this, but they could have won them the game tonight. But again, you got to quickly move on, take the positive out of this game. They did get a point. Great goaltending battle tonight as well.
So let's go back through a couple of things you pointed out. First, Anaheim obviously decided they could not run with the Predators up and down. So they tightened things up and they created sort of a defensive hockey game, and that's what we saw.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is a team that's coming off an embarrassing loss at home. Did not like how they played. So they kind of went back to the drawing board. And when Nashville's coming in, they know they have to tighten up and they have to be structured. They can't run and gun with the Predators. That's not the type of team they have. And that's not the personnel that's healthy right now. So they really had to clog it up. I thought they did a really good job of doing that. I thought they got a lot of their opportunities off of off transition from that good structure. So it was working well for them. I thought all game, to be honest with you, the Preds were able to turn it up in the third period and create some more offense. They outshot the Ducks in the third period, but all in all, I thought the Ducks executed their game plan perfectly.
Second straight game, the Predators have gone into the locker room at the end of two behind, and this one almost felt like it could be a 1-0 game. When Ryan Getzlaf scored, a lot of momentum for the Ducks, so a clutch goal by Kevin Fiala, a guy who really needed to score, he got the big goal, so they don't get to overtime without that play. And you got a feeling it was not going to be easy to get any kind of goal against John Gibson tonight, who's been red hot.
Yeah, it was a combination of John Gibson playing extremely well tonight and their team really defending well also. But I thought, you know, the Predators are a team that they have that next level. You know, it might not be going their way for two periods, but they've got that ability to turn it up. And I thought they did that in the third period to generate more offense than they really had the first two periods and were able to get that nice goal. It was Craig Smith and Kyle Turris did a good job on the forecheck, hunted that puck down, turned it over, and then Kevin Fiala, nice close support, faded out to that quiet area, and Turris was able to feed Fiala, and he just ripped it and beat Gibson.
Now, let's break down one of the best saves of the year, and I don't know that I've ever seen a save quite like that. Now, people are going to think about the All-Star game last year, but to me, this one might have been more difficult. A double deflection late in the game, score tied at one, puck pops up in the air, Pecorine sees it go over his shoulder, it's heading into the net, he reaches behind him and sort of does a reverse volleyball set. I don't know what you call it, but it was an amazing save, and that's the only reason the Predators got to overtime.
Yeah, if fans, if you guys want to call in and make a suggestion, I've asked for one on Twitter, but that save was incredible. And, you know, saves in an all-star game. It's not a real game. Guys are messing around, having fun. You see some of that stuff in practice. But during a game when it's like you said, Willie, it had a double deflection, then he just reaches back. He almost doesn't see it until it's in his peripheral vision, and just the instantaneous reaction of his body. And I think, like, we got to watch this more and break it down, because it was just that good. But he saved the game with that save. It was an absolutely huge save. And you could tell he was locked in right from the start. The only other goal he got scored on regulation was an unfortunate bounce, a great play by the Ducks, and then went off the leg of Roman Josi. So he was, both goalies were just phenomenal tonight.
Now let's get to the one big issue right now for the Predators. They've been very sound in virtually every area of the game except for the power play. And tonight, that's going to be the big stat that everybody looks at. They went 0-for-6. And in the overtime, they had 2 minutes of a 4-on-3. And really, that was their best power play. You can't really fault what they got. John Gibson shined in that one, particularly a follow-up save on Ryan Johansson that was right in front. So the power play, I'm sure, is going to have everybody talking right now. They switched up the personnel a lot without Victor Arvidsson, without Callie Yarncroke, and they sort of admitted they hadn't had a chance to practice it, so it might take some time. But that was really maybe their best opportunity to win this game.
Yeah, this is a game, you know, they haven't needed it yet, and they've been able to really, you know, have a lot of success early in this season without the power play really clicking. They have the personnel to do it, but now it's getting to the point where it's becoming a little bit concerning, because those are the types of games when you need that special teams to win you a hockey game, and they didn't have that tonight. And they did change up the personnel. It was probably time for that. It hadn't been working before. I'll be interested to see what they do against the Sharks, but it's something that it's getting to the point where hopefully I really feel like it's a matter of time. They have the guys, but to me, something's got to change. I don't know if it's the mentality, the strategy, but something definitely has to change, because what they're doing right now is not working.
Big test, as you mentioned, tomorrow night. Back-to-back, the Sharks will be rested. The Sharks have beaten the Predators. Remember, they came from behind and basically stole the game for the Predators in Nashville. Nashville led 4-2 with 11 minutes to go and were on the power play. A shorthanded goal really sparked the comeback for the Sharks. So this will be a big test, both mentally and physically, with the Predators kind of banged up. That was a physical game. A lot of guys went in and out of the lineup. P.K. Subban missed some time in the first period. He was able to come back. But this, we'll see how the Predators are tested tomorrow night against a very, very tough Sharks team.
Yeah, this could be a really hard test. First of all, that's a tough building to go in. Second night of a back-to-back, missing some guys and guys getting banged up tonight. It's going to be a real tough test. The Predators might have to take a page out of what the Ducks did tonight and really try to simplify, really be tough defensively and try to squeak one out. But, they're going to be rested, and it's a Sharks team that's starting to play a lot better as well.
So it's likely to be UC Saros tomorrow. We know Victor Arvidsson is on the injured list, and so he will not be available. As we mentioned before, Callie Yarncroke didn't play tonight in Anaheim. I'd be surprised if he was back in there. They dressed 7 defensemen tonight, and so we'll see what kind of lineup they do as well. Mace, on to San Jose, and we'll join everybody tomorrow night. Of course, Pete Weber and Hal Gill will have the call here on 102.5 The Game. And so let's send it back to Morning Drive.
Thank you very much, Willie. Willie Donick and Chris Mason after the game last night, and they go to San Jose tonight at the Shark Tank. And let's face it, the Preds owe them one, because San Jose scored 3 goals in the final 8.5 minutes or so. Back on, I want to say it was October 22nd or 23rd here in Tennessee, so back-to-back, and the Preds only have a few losses, one of which is to San Jose.
Yeah, really exciting, totally different style of offense, obviously. Anaheim wants to sort of beat it up and slow it down. I mean, certainly San Jose's got some nice physical players, but they want to play up-and-down speed game. They're a very talented offensive team. We've already seen that here, so should be a lot of fun, and I think if you get away – if you come out with a win in either of the 2 games against Arizona and San Jose, and you come home this weekend and you've gotten 3 to 4 points, maybe 2 ties and a win, I still think you feel pretty good. I just think the team has set the bar so high that it's almost like, hey, they went 1-1-1. That's disappointing. And, like, you know, most people would take that on a 3 games in 4-day road trip.
All right, coming up in just about 5 minutes, we've got the big finish. But right now, let's get an update from Chase McCabe on our poll question of the day.
Yeah, so we put this up at 1025 underscore MD because we started off the show where you, Nick Kale, posed the question, should I be renamed the mailman? Because yeah, I bring in mail.
Set up the audience because they might not have heard the discussion.
Because I walked in the studio this morning, you're getting ready, and I dropped off a letter for Derek Mason because, you know, D-Mace gets stuff to sign and things like that a lot. So I'll deliver the mail sometimes, and I said I feel like a mailman, you know, bringing you guys fan letters and stuff. And you brought up the question, should I not be the constable, should I be the mailman? And so we put it on Twitter.
Well, and your outfit today was very postal worker-esque. You had like this blue pullover with
and
gray
I go
pants.
Postal, as you have pointed out, which I am not going to dispute sometimes. Yeah. But you try working with you. Yeah. Anyway,
exactly.
Drive you around, all this stuff. So should
take
Chase,
me to the doctor's office, constable.
Should Chase remain the constable or become the mailman or hold both titles? 48% of you say I remain the constable.
And that's the majority?
That's the majority. 30% okay. Mailman,
my vote
22%
would be,
both.
My vote would be constable over mailman McCabe.
Can
sure.
I be yes. your can I be your side hustle?
Huh? It could be.
Yeah, okay. There we go.
Could be.
Yeah, and why are you getting mail delivered to the station?
Because I got it like
who does
that?
Because
I got it like that.
Well, you just get it sent to your palatial estate.
No, I don't want them
you
to know my address.
You think he's going to give him the address?
Exactly, Nicholas.
Nick, he hasn't given us the address.
I just
what are you talking about?
I just had a thought about Chase being a mailman. Could you imagine him like figuring out his route, and he gets used to having a couple of dogs that are overly aggressive, and he carries like little dog treats with him as he's giving out the mail? Oh,
no.
Hey, Pookie.
No, I'm just going to carry
him. Why is a dog named Pookie?
I'm going to carry gas station hot dogs and just throw those at him.
Can you get some diarrhea?
Oh, my goodness.
All right, coming up
love
next.
Love you guys.
Yeah, feeling's not mutual. The big finish. Stay there. Morning Drive. Yeah, that's right. We do it every day at 9:45 here on Morning Drive. It's time for the big finish. The big finish features the Morning Drive Daily Rewind, what we learned today. And on tap tonight, if you missed any of the show, 3 hours and 45 minutes in, the constable, Chase McCabe, the mailman, the warden, whatever you want to call him, puts together a 4 or 5 minute rendition of
the
everything
goat.
That you missed. Maybe you are the goat. That's all encompassing, right?
Yes.
All right, there you go. So it's time. Good morning. And Smashville, good morning, and thank you for joining us. It is Morning Drive off and running on this Tuesday, ESPN 102.5. The game, Chase McCabe comes in, hands out some mail. He's got a couple of envelopes, and he says, you know, at times I feel like a mailman here at the radio station. And I was just looking at him, and he's got like a blue station pullover, which is very sporty. I'd probably wear it playing golf if it was a little chilly, a little windy, a little rainy.
You'd wear it if you had one.
Yes, I would. And he's got the gray dress pants on this morning. And I'm like, I'll be damned. He looks like a United States postal worker.
He does deliver all of the hot takes every morning from 6 until 10 a.m. every single morning. So, 102.5 The Game.
Like, I'm wondering, should we reevaluate our designation of constable?
So, I've done some research. I didn't know much about the Postal Service hierarchy, but I did some research on this.
I'm glad you made good use of the 5 minutes.
No. I already knew all about the fact that the Predators went 0-7 on the power play. All right, settle down back there. Postmaster General is the chief executive officer of the post office. The chief postal inspector is number 2, and I don't think I want to put you in charge of the entire Postal Service, but I think I'm comfortable with you being number 2 in charge.
It's okay. Nobody else wants to put me in charge either.
So the chief postal inspector is now your second title after the constable.
And we've seen the constable go postal. So this works well. And now you could deliver your citations directly via the mail because you work for the postal office.
Now, do I go horseback or do I have a little truck?
Oh, I think you should be the guy walking.
Okay.
I actually vote also for constable.
It's your life.
I'm going. Well, you know, I appreciate you saying that.
Well, put up a poll question. See what the audience thinks.
I am.
Well, but you don't normally get to pick your nicknames in life, though.
That's true.
Not just you, Chase, but like anybody.
It's true.
Well, you don't really get to pick anything anymore. Let's just be honest. People tell you how to live your life.
You know what? I go to the grocery store and I get to decide. That's where I'm powerful. because I sure as heck don't decide anything at the house.
Exactly. Why do you think I enjoy the produce section so much? Great stuff, Baldy. We'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure, Nick. Anytime. Take care, Derek. I'll see you down the road.
Yep. You got it.
Bye, Brian.
Okay.
There he is. Brian Baldinger.
Spanish or whatever. There's like a translator in Derek's head that translates from regular human talk into what Derek actually hears. Which is, damn, you look good.
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
Oh,
how's class?
With the quickness.
Oh. Hey, Derek, how you doing?
Good to see you, Jennifer. I'll see you in math class. You guys know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I felt like that against with Brian Baldinger.
Oh, my
goodness. Baldinger's like, good to talk to you, Nick. Take it easy, Derek.
At 10:15 yesterday, Buck, we gotta find that laugh. Very unpleasant.
Hang on. You just did something that this touches a nerve with the constable. When anyone is like, "Hey, we gotta find that." No, there is no we. There's no we. You are not gonna go sift through audio and find your silly little drop that you
we
want.
We sounded
There's
better.
There's no we.
We sounded better.
Well, what's really starting to be strange to me is your Nick obsession with Buck's laugh. That's starting to be a...
He
had a great one yesterday. Let's go get that.
It's just very...
It's a little weird.
You were going to those high school dances?
Hey, yeah. Yeah. Get it, girl.
With the high top fade?
Did you always say to...
Silk shirt?
Did you always say to yourself when you were dancing,
get it, girl. Hey, girl, get it, girl.
That's what you're saying?
That was my
God, that was what I was doing wrong the whole time in middle school.
You didn't say, get it, girl.
Knuckleheads. Mm-hmm. Don't be ripping on the Czech Republic for no reason.
Hey, Czech Number Republic. Four. They got good Czechs.
So you're not eating the sausage wrapped in a donut?
They got good hockey players?
Yeah.
Remember back in the day, my dad would be like, just eat whatever you want. You just got to burn it off. Yeah, you want to eat five slices of pizza? That's fine. Just get on the treadmill for 40 minutes. That was my dad's thoughts on nutrition and exercise back in the day.
Pop the kale.
Died of a heart attack.
Oh, my God. Are you being serious?
No, it's just the whole thing. You know.
Hold on, hon.
But no, he actually died of a heart attack?
Yeah.
You can't say that.
You don't
that,
just get to
Nick,
throw that
no,
in.
I'm just kidding. He didn't die of a heart attack. No, I'm just kidding.
I was like, oh, my God.
Exactly.
So is your dad alive or not?
No, he's dead.
Nick, you can't do it. Oh, my goodness.
What?
Papa Kale, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry to the whole Kale family.
He's sorry too, trust me. He's embarrassed.
Oh my God.
What just happened?
I don't know.
I
have no idea.
Did I say
you yada 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 your entire dad?
Exactly. that'll do it for my career, the morning driver.
So is your dad alive or not?
Gosh, Nick. Are you dead? No, he's dead, but stump matter. Doesn't
no,
matter.
Did he really die? Oh, yeah. Dead of heart attack.
Heart attack, man. So, keep it moving.
Hello, Chase is listening to the entire conversation, and he just goes, wait a second. So is he alive or is he dead?
Gosh, Nick. Papa Kale, we're sorry.
Yeah.
We're sorry. Oh.
That'll be a drop moving forward. Papa Kale, we're sorry. Every time I say something stupid, we'll just play that. All right.
That's just the irony.
Chase McCabe, did we learn anything today?
Now, what we learned today.
I actually learned that Rhys Davis has hot takes. He's got very strong takes about the college football playoff when it comes to automatic bids and expansion. He was not happy about it. And he wants to shove it down people's throats that it's a bad idea.
Yeah. Well, I've learned that you need to be very, very careful when you're driving down side streets in East Nashville. Because they are very narrow. And people park on both sides. So,
yes,
you know, bring your side mirrors in as you're driving by. Because you don't want to knock them off on somebody else's car.
I have learned that Nick's father is no longer with us.
Yeah. Papa Kale, I'm sorry.
But I think that's true. I'm not actually sure if I learned that if he's passed or not. And I hate that we're laughing about it, because if he actually is passed, then I feel bad. If he's alive, this whole thing is hilarious, even
yes,
more hilarious.
So funny.
So I'm not sure what I've learned or not today. I also learned that the constable needs a key. That's what I've learned.
Mm-hmm. Just needs a key. Every constable needs a key.
Every constable. You need a baton, a whistle.
A key.
a hat.
And a badge.
A badge and a key. That's what you need.
And a notepad to write those citations.
Absolutely.
I'm going to be writing a lot of those.
All right, that'll do
so
it.
So is your father actually alive?
No, he passed away like 7 years ago.
Was it of a heart attack?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. So you say you did just make up the entire
heart attack part.
Yeah, it was just for radio purposes.
Do you see how we were confused then when you were like, no, I was kidding. And then we were like, wait a second.
Man.
Whatever makes this show better, I'll do it.
Can't do it to Papa Kale.
Okay. Everything is content.
Exactly,
it is.
You're right.
All right, let's get to On Tap tonight.
I blame Tiffany.
It's your guide for the happenings around town and what to watch from your couch. Here's What's On Tap Tonight, now on Morning Drive.
All right, boys, another late West Coast one for the Preds tonight. That is on tap, certainly, but also going to give you the college football playoff rankings, 6 o'clock Central Time tonight on ESPN. I don't think we're going to see really any change because it was pretty much status quo last week in college football, but certainly one of the things to watch, the playoff rankings, Reese Davis, 6 o'clock.
Got Western Michigan at Ball State, throw out the records when those two get together tonight. Uh-huh. So I'm what's the new show you told me about? The
OA?
OA. I'm going to go check that out this afternoon and O-H? See what's all over the OA.
OA, not Ohio.
Oh.
And I got a dentist appointment today.
Hey. Ooh. No, I like dentist appointments.
What?
Tell Dr. Kelly Rice we said hi.
Get my teeth clean, man.
I mean, I like
love
the,
it. Yeah, clean.
I like the clean feeling, but I feel like they should have bought me a drink or something.
You like that little scalpel type thing, like flicking in your teeth?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I always have the gas stuff on, so I'm good.
Yeah.
Wait. Just to get a cleaning, you get nitrous?
I get it all, man. That little
Where
thing,
do you
man.
Go?
How did you last 15 years in the NFL? Like, seriously. You don't like the cold. You got to get knocked out to get your teeth clean.
He's got $500 facial cream.
See, you weather. What happens is you do all of this on the front end. You endure it on the front end. So the back end, you don't. You know? Now I don't have to. So,
okay.
Must be nice.
Would you take could you get hit?
No. Mm-mm. I don't want no parts of that, brother.
I also learned that Derek...
My head hurts now that you even said it, man. Goodness.
I also learned that when Derek was dancing with himself at middle school, he said, get it, girl. And I learned that that was my biggest flaw. I wasn't saying that.
Get it, girl.
The middle school dance.
All right, that'll do it. Another edition of Morning Drive in the books. We will reconvene tomorrow, break down and react to the Preds' late one out at the Shark Tank tonight. Willie and Darren coming up next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Brady, DJ Nashville, I love ya.
Get it, girl.